And good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland just 1 minute before 9 o'clock on your Thursday morning. Coming up in 1 hour, it'll be Chris Andre hosting Air Cascadia with headlines, interviews, and commentary. Join us at 10:15 today on Flashpoints, where today a report from Beirut, Lebanon on this week's suicide bombing. Also, the attorney for the family of Andy Lopez is appointed to the U.S. Justice Department's Civil Rights Commission for Northern California. At 11 today on Between the Covers, host David Naiman interviews Joe Walton about her novel, My Real Children, the story of an old woman who remembers two lives, two worlds, and two different versions of modern history. And at 11:30, the film show celebrates film archivists with a return visit from Mississippi Records co-founder Eric Isaacson. We also hear archivist Rick Prelinger talking about his new interactive film project, No More Road Trips. That's all coming up, but first, it's a special hour-long press watch featuring Teresa Mitchell with the news you're not supposed to know. That's coming up next on KBOO, KBOO Portland.
Listen to The Film Show, the fourth Thursday of each month at 11:30 a.m. The Film Show features news and interviews about the local and independent film scene. That's The Film Show, the fourth Thursday of the month at 11:30 a.m., only on KBOO Portland.
Hi, I'm Celeste Carey.
And I'm Cecil Prescott.
Join us this coming Monday for more talk radio, when our guest will be Shana Redmond, author of Anthem, Social Movements and the Sound of Solidarity in the African Diaspora.
We'll talk about how black music has contributed to the growth and mobilization of the modern black citizen.
That's More Talk Radio, Monday, June 30th at 8 a.m. right here on KBOO Portland.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know, giving you the tools to destroy billionaire rule. Counts per minute in the KBOO studio right now, 19, 21 counts per minute, 10 micro-rims per hour. This show is dedicated to Linda's ears. Go Linda's ears! Go Linda's ears! When I prepare the information for these broadcasts, I often spend much, if not all, of my focus on imperialism and corporate control of the society, and I call for a revolution to set the society onto a reasonable and sustainable path. But now and again, I have to look around me at the life I see around me in my daily life and ask, how could it be that in this 50th year since Freedom Summer, we live in such a Jim Crow apartheid society? How can the people band together if we accept arbitrary race and class divisions? How can African Americans get up when they've been knocked down by Jim Crow, knocked down by exclusion from the New Deal, knocked down by exclusion from the GI Bill, knocked down by being put in the front lines of the Vietnam War, knocked down by the redlined subprime mortgage no more jobs crisis? The drug war is a race war, a class war, and a civil war. It has to end. It's enforced by a largely white class of cops and judges and prison masters. And how can we allow children, for that matter, to be incarcerated for the crime of being born to undocumented migrants? How can we allow the normality of a world where a woman must fear going out into the street alone? There can be no revolution until white male supremacy is brought down. KBOO is radio intersectionality. Intersectionality is the way forward. If you care about the world, you must care about all the people in the world, all the people around you without exception. So I think about those things. And I'm very grateful to be part of KBOO Community Radio. You ever consider joining up? If you're listening on a terrestrial radio receiver, well, you're not being tracked by the NSA. But if you have access to the web, maybe you want to pull up kboo.fm and look at that tip jar on the right. Click it. It'll show you how to join. You'll be glad you did. When I read that Boko Haram, the armed fundamentalists in Nigeria, are able to fool an entire village by showing up in army uniforms, I have to ask, how close are they to the Nigerian army? Or to its generals, anyway? Am I supposed to believe that they have the uniforms just laying around? There is obviously a connection with power revealed by that incident. President Goodluck Jonathan had to be roused from slumber when those women were kidnapped. It was no big deal to him. Let it stink, let it rot. Or did he secretly approve? Does he like seeing women being put into their place as chattel, as livestock to be traded and sold? Der Spiegel, quoted in Wikipedia, says during May 2014, Nigerian soldiers shot at the car of their divisional commander, whom they suspected of colluding with Boko Haram. And it was reported that 9 Nigerian generals, were being investigated for suspected sale of weapons to Boko Haram. What's going on there? And what's it got to do about the backlash against women? And when I read that an intercepted phone call with U.S. officials revealed that many of the dead in the Maidan uprising were shot by false flag snipers, a la U.S. Venezuela coup imaginations, and that Svoboda and right sector Nazis are in charge of the new Ukrainian armed forces, I have to ask, why don't the Russians just cross the border and secure the area? They have a history with Nazis, you know. Why take chances? But I'm being facetious. The Russians know that they must be deliberate and cautious when facing down the Americans. And this is an American gig. It's sneaky, you know. We had Occupy here. Occupy was viciously put down. I was just driving past Pioneer Square yesterday. And, pardon me. I looked at the scene and all of a sudden it flashed back to me. 2011, when I saw people huddling on one side of the street and an army of cops on the other facing them down. And it made me want to scream. It really did. But there were many in Ukraine who had sincerely hoped for reform and change, and here in the U.S. we were able to have an Occupy movement, even though, of course, yes, it was crushed by the fists of the elite classes. They let it play out a little bit, and so people hoped that maybe Occupy could happen and succeed and something like that in Ukraine. Well, nothing of the sort. This is imperial machinations. The super rich are firmly in control and intend to rule Ukraine with an iron Nazi fist. How sad. How American. A death squad government eager to please the U.S. petroleum industry. And then, speaking of oil profits, there's the idea that a column of ISIL pickups, or ISIS if you want to call them that, and SUVs a mile long could pile into Iraq and not be noticed by U.S. spy satellites. How likely is that? What's that smell like to you? Not only did the NSA and the NRO have the time and place of the event, the arrival of their favorite anti-Syrian terrorists, they had the license plate numbers on the trucks, beyond a doubt. So when they claim they were caught by surprise, come on. I take it to mean one of at least two things. A, there's collaboration in this sudden partition of Iraq by the U.S. secret police agencies. And, or B, U.S. intelligence gathering is by and for the elite classes. And when they tell you they don't know, what they're telling you is any information so gleaned is not for your consumption, you impertinent peon. You're listening to Press Watch on KBO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. And seems like I have a little bit of a frog in my throat. But oh well. I'll just let the frog hang out for the moment. Fortunately, the anti-war movement here is beginning to wake up. There's already been an anti-war protest in Portland, doubtless more planned. Here again I say, let there be intersectionality. I demand an end to the war on workers, in the war on William, in the war on women. Stop the Jim Crow drug war. Stop the war on immigrants and their families, in the war on the environment. And I demand an end to an imperial war, too. Actually, I wasn't too concerned with the war on William. That was a misstatement. That's live radio for you. I demand a full and gainful employment, housing, and education for all, and an end to rape culture, and all these things and more are possible, especially if we stop hand-feeding the billionaire class, a class which should never exist. And this reminds me again, since the last few weeks I've been mentioning it, please find and download the Debt Resistors Operations Manual. 1 in 7 Americans are being hounded by collectors. The collectors buy the debt at pennies on the dollar, and that debt was created out of thin air in the first place, if you only knew. Debt Resistors Operations Manual. Look it up. Debt Resistors Operations Manual. You can do that. Well, this is Press Watch, and we have an hour to talk. Well, 50 minutes now. 49 minutes to talk. Okay. And I encourage you to call in with your comments or questions. 503-231-8187. That's 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. Give some headlines here. Here's a quote from an AP article by Kasim Abdul Zahra. And by the way, I'm not using this to report on something via AP. I'm using it to criticize AP. Quote, Iraq enjoyed several years of relative calm before violence spiked a year ago after al-Maliki moved to crush a Sunni protest movement against alleged discrimination and abuse at the hands of his government and security forces, end quote. Yeah, you want to hear that again? Iraq enjoyed several years of relative calm? On what bizarro planet? That's what passes for news reporting on AP about Iraq. It's just, they're not even trying. All right, then there's the Ebola situation. I continue to report on Ebola. It has killed hundreds of people in Africa and in Guinea, Sierra Leone, and Liberia. And Doctors Without Borders says it is out of control. The World Health Organization is working to enhance its response. It doesn't seem to be big news here, and I don't think that's rational, because this is a very dangerous disease. It's killing, I'll get on to the details, how many people it's killing. There have been 350 deaths since the epidemic began in Guinea's capital, Conakry, according to the World Health Organization. This is from CBC.Canada. The outbreak began in early December 2013 in Guinea, and it's the deadliest outbreak since Ebola first emerged in 1976. The epidemic is out of control. It's a quote of Bart Janssens, director of operations with Doctors Without Borders, with the appearance of new sites in Guinea, Sierra Leone, and Liberia, there's a real risk of spreading it to other areas. In terms of the number of cases and deaths, this is the biggest outbreak of Ebola. That's Mark Poncine, says he's the emergency coordinator for Doctors Without Borders in Conakry. Poncine has been at the center of the epidemic in a rainforest region on the border of Sierra Leone and Liberia. It's also unprecedented in its geographical distribution. Poncine said several factors are complicating efforts to control the current outbreak. Again, this is from CBC.ca, Canadian broadcast. Part of the population doesn't believe that Ebola exists as a contagious illness caused by a virus, so patients aren't coming to treatment centers. People have more confidence in traditional practitioners than the health system, which means health officials have trouble stopping the spread of the virus. The highest risk of infection occurs when a person dies. At funerals, people prepare the corpse, and mourners also touch the body, which increases the risk of contamination. Poncine said, we are very stretched, that's for sure. Patients can be cured. Dr. Tim Jagadic of Windsor, Ontario, is a general practitioner and volunteer with Doctors Without Borders. He was in Conakry from the end of March to mid-April when he helped to treat the first small wave of patients. He said, we are seeing good outcomes with these patients. There's a 90% mortality attached with Ebola virus, the Zaire strain, and in my personal experience, we are seeing about a 50% mortality rate, end quote. Now, I just want to depart from that text right there. Yeah, that's what he said. It's a hell of a thing to say. I guess I get it in the context. Down from 90% to 50%. But that is why I keep passing on reporting about Ebola, because this disease has no cure. This disease can kill 90% of the people it attacks. I would guess that the physical condition of people who are scrabbling just to get enough to eat affects the mortality rate in Africa. But if I were to wildly guess that if it were to come over here, if it were to have a 20% mortality rate, we're talking about 60 million dead. We're talking about a plague. And the reason we're not talking about it is because it's killing black people far away, but it's killing people in areas now that have airports. This is the modern world. This could appear here at any moment. Here's hoping that it does not. But 60 million dead, of course, is incomprehensible. That's a figure I'm pulling entirely out of my head. But when it comes to what to report, this is one of my principal criticisms of corporate-owned media. What to report requires an analysis of the situation. It requires a gestalt that seems to be missing in a lot of corporate-owned news organizations these days. You know what Russian roulette is? You put one bullet in a revolver, you spin the casing, you put it up against your head, and you know, either you die or you don't die, and it's a 1 in 6 chance. Now, supposing that for no reason, someone had a great big revolver and it had 1,000 chambers, and laughing, he stands out in the street and he aims the revolver at you and he spins the cylinder. Would you get out of the way? It's only a 1 in 1,000 chance that you'll be shot dead. But why wouldn't you get out of the way? Why would you take that risk? What's the risk now that Ebola will get on an airplane and with its 21-day incubation rate appear somewhere in the industrialized world, in the U.S., in other words, amongst white people who matter to the corporate press? I would say there's a good chance it can spread now because there's 330 people dead. There's more than 500 people who have been infected. It has, and here's the thing, it has infected health workers who know to be so careful, who in fact put on moon suits before they treat patients who are in the final stage of the disease. The final stage of the disease can be terrifying. It often causes blood to break out all over the body. It's hemorrhagic disease. They know, they use bleach. They are so careful, and they have been dying of it, and they take airplanes. So I'm telling you, this is something to pay attention to. And of course, there needs to be a cure, even though the people who are dying right now haven't got a dime, because it's our lives that are at stake as well. Number to call with your comments or questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187, worldsocialist.org. WSWS.org reports article by Andre Damon. Multimillionaire Hillary Clinton denies she is part of the truly well-off. And I think it says a lot about our society, how she doesn't. But he writes, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, who together with her husband Bill Clinton has earned more than $100 million in speaking fees from corporations and business foundations, told The Guardian last weekend she was unlike the truly well-off. And there's no need to go into the rest of the article. I think I will, though, because, well, what can you do but laugh? In the 15 months since Clinton left office as Secretary of State, she has made over $5 million in speaking fees, putting her squarely within the top 0.1% of income earners. Now, departing from that text, no one anywhere really thinks that it's worth that much money to have her to hear what she has to say. That's not what it's about. This is graft. This is how corporations pay off people that they want to give influence to. Instead of making a campaign contribution, they can pay for a speaking fee. And you can get up and say anything you want. You can get up and say the things that you always say or the things that you could easily get from a news feed. And you get this tremendous fee, and then they're, you know, being paid for wages earned, supposedly. Of course not. It's just payola. I remember when Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich, got $4 million for a book that nobody read. It's just a giveaway from the corporations to the people who represent them. And this is one of the ways that the House and Senate and all of our legislatures and really most of our politicians are bought and paid for by corporations. There's so many ways to do it. One of them is to offer a job quietly, sub rosa. And you see, when our politicians leave office, that they go and get very handsome salaries doing whatever for the corporations that they have coincidentally supported for months or years. Number to call, 503-231-8187. We've got that. We've got till 10 o'clock to talk today, and I would love to talk to you about the issues of the day. Hillary Clinton is seen as the most likely Democratic presidential nominee in the 2016 election, although she has not yet announced plans to run. The Guardian write-up of Clinton's interview noted, America's glaring income inequality is certain to be a central bone of contention in the 2016 presidential election. But with her huge personal wealth, how could Clinton possibly hope to be credible on this issue when people see her as part of the problem, not its solution? But Clinton replied, but they don't see me as part of the problem because we pay ordinary income tax. Unlike a lot of people who are truly well off, not to name names, and we've done it through dint of hard work. And she didn't laugh when she was saying that. That's the end of the quote there. Yeah, hard work, standing up and giving the same speech that you always give and getting millions. I'll bet that each and every one of you has got a better idea of what hard work is than that. Just some inkling. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187, and Harry is on the air.
Ah, good morning, and thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Yes, I in the news media, they're mostly talking about what's going on in Iraq, but I think the most important thing that's going on is going on in Afghanistan. They're having an election right now. Karzai can't run, because remember the last election he ran and how it was, you know, it was a really bad election, and a lot of...
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, but there's another election going on right now, and also we had a prisoner exchange with the Taliban, so I'm trying to figure out if maybe we have we signed a peace treaty with the Taliban, but they don't want us to know about.
You know, there's just no such damn thing as democracy under occupation. That's just such a ridiculous... I mean, you just can't proceed from there. I mean, the country is occupied by armed troops from the United States, and they're having an election, and there's the troops looking at them. I mean, if you were in the studio with me and I were back to the metaphor holding a gun, well, that's very American, don't you think? Holding a gun on you, and I said, would you like to leave your wallet with me, or would you like to leave out the door there? What do you think you would answer? It's not a free choice.
Life, you know?
Yeah. It's I mean, they're literally under the gun. So, you know, I don't give a damn what the outcome of the election is because it's a farce from the get-go.
You mentioned earlier about Hillary Clinton running for a president for a Democratic Party.
Yeah.
I have another candidate that might be even better. The senator from Wisconsin.
The senator from Wisconsin?
Al Franken.
Uh-huh.
I think he'd make a good presidential candidate.
Well, I think he'd be better than Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, definitely. Well, that's all I have for you. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Oh, yeah, sure. I can think of plenty of people. Bernie Sanders, Dennis Kucinich. Global Research writes in an article by Julie Levesque, Iraq is once again front page news, and once again the picture that is presented to us in the Western mainstream media is a mixture of half-truths, falsehoods, disinformation, and propaganda. And departing from this text, this is to back up what I was talking about earlier about Iraq. And returning to the text, the mainstream media will not tell you the U.S. is supporting both sides in the Iraqi conflict. Washington is overtly supporting the Iraqi Shiite government while covertly training and arming and funding the Sunni Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, or ISIS. Supporting the influx of terrorist brigades in Iraq is an act of foreign aggression. But the mainstream media will tell you that the Obama administration is concerned, can you hear the air quotes, by the action committed by the terrorists. The preferred narrative in the U.S. and most Western mainstream media is that the current situation is due to the U.S. withdrawal, which ended in December 2011. That's another word with air quotes, withdrawal. More than 200 U.S. troops and military advisors remained in Iraq. And, of course, departing from the text, there's all those contractors. This portrait of events, she writes, in which the U.S. withdrawal is to blame for the insurgency, does not draw any connection between the U.S. invasion of 2003 and the occupation that ensued. It also ignores the death squads trained by U.S. advisors in Iraq in the wake of the invasion, and which are at the heart of the current turmoil. And in this article on Global Research, Julia Vest goes on to describe the technique of tension, of the divide and conquer technique. And I would like to pass along part of this, and I would also like you to think in terms of how this is the strategy of tension is used against us in the U.S. and why intersectionality is so important. Intersectionality used to be called solidarity, whatever you want to call it. We've got to look out for each other's human rights, and when we do, it upsets the powers that be here. It upsets the corporate control terribly, and they create things like COINTELPRO. They do things like when Judy Berry organized sawmill workers, timber industry workers, to stand in solidarity with timber protesters. Well, she got bombed. And she got bombed because that's what really, I mean, it's standing together, it's solidarity, it's intersectionality that really freaks out the power. And there's good reason for that. It's intersectionality that works. It's solidarity that works. But returning to that article, the mainstream media does not want you to understand what's going on in Iraq. Its goal is to shape perceptions and opinions by crafting a view of the world which serves powerful interests. For that matter, they will tell you it's a civil war. What is unfolding is a process of constructive chaos engineered by the West. The destabilization of Iraq and its fragmentation has been planned long ago and is part of the Anglo-American-Israeli military roadmap in the Middle East, as was explained in 2006 in an article which said this project, which has been in the planning stages for several years, consists in creating an arc of instability, chaos, and violence extending from Lebanon, Palestine, and Syria to Iraq, the Persian Gulf, Iran, and the borders of the NATO garrisoned Afghanistan. The new Middle East project was introduced public by Washington and Tel Aviv with the expectation that Lebanon would be the pressure point for realigning the whole Middle East and thereby unleashing the forces of constructive chaos. This constructive chaos, which generates conditions of violence and warfare throughout the region, would in turn be used so that the United States, Britain, and Israel could redraw the map of the Middle East in accordance with their geostrategic needs and objectives. And speaking for myself, when I read that the U.S., Britain, and Israel could redraw the map, what's really meant here is that the elite classes of the United States, Britain, and Israel could redraw the map. This isn't for you. You're not to understand this. You're not to be involved except to support it. Democracy is out of the question, which is why we need a revolution. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. We still have a half hour to talk. And I'd love to talk to you. Once again, that number, 503-231-8187. And Thomas is on the air.
Yeah, good morning, Teresa.
Good morning.
Hey, a few quick comments about Clinton and the 2016 election, and a few comments about the pandemic potential here in the U.S.
Go for it.
Yeah, you know, the thing with Clinton, I think they're probably going to trot her out in 2016. Remember, she still thinks it's her turn after losing to Obama last time.
Well, and we seem to be okay with dynasties now in the United States, which I just think is pitiable. I mean, it's such a degeneration of social thought that we would be more likely to vote for a dynastic era. But go on.
Oh, yeah, I agree entirely. I mean, we look at the retrospective collective hallucination about what really went on during the, Bill Clinton years, and if that's any indication of the amount of analytical rigor that most hereditary Democrat voters are going to take to the polls with them, then we're in trouble. I mean, you think about Hillary Clinton, you can't find more of a neocon in the Democratic Party. You know, go ask the people down in Honduras or Haiti or Egypt how much Clinton cares about the people's popular democracy and self-determination. But I can imagine, you know, that when it comes right down to it, there's not going to be any serious primary challenge to Clinton. It's going to be just the same old kind of diddlehead behavior where they refused to put any kind of challenges against Obama. And I'm sure that all of those, you know, good old establishment NPR liberals out there with their dog-eared 2012 Obama Biden stickers on the back of their Priuses are just going to go walk in lockstep and close their eyes to, you know, and give Clinton a free pass because she's a woman, the same way they give Obama a free pass because his dad happened to be black. But anyway, on the question of the pandemic in the United States potential, you know, we're massively insecure here. You think about, compared with Western Europe and much of the rest of the world, because of our for-profit medical system, there's almost no slack in our ERs. I mean, anybody who's gone to the emergency room in the last 20 years can tell you that even in the best of times, with people just walking in with broken bones and lacerations, you might be there for 3 or 4 hours before you even get seen. Imagine what's going to happen when anything happens on a large scale, like associated with a 1918 influenza pandemic or anything like that in the United States. You know, there's no cavalry that's going to come in over the hill. And you can blame this privatization, this bipartisan-supported medical privatization model. You know, there's no slack in the system. There's no extra beds.
The extra beds have been taken out. That's true. Hospitals are about profit.
You compare that to, like, say, a country like Switzerland, who, incidentally, Switzerland has a lower per capita GDP than the United States, so theoretically less wealth to spread than the United States. They purposely, and indeed much of Europe does this too, they purposefully keep extra beds and slack in their hospital system so that they can be sure in case there's an emergency. That's right. They pay a little extra money to not work the nurses and doctors to death and make sure that we can maintain security. Because, I mean, just
imagine that.
If anything happens, influenza or up here in the Northwest, an earthquake comes down the pike, we're in trouble. We're in real trouble because of this for-profit system.
Well, and I would like to use this opportunity to point out once again that when we had the swine flu epidemic here, we were all encouraged to sneer at it. But the fact is, thank you for your call. The fact is, 10,000 people died during a period of time in which they died against the arc of the usual influenza season. And what that means is that during a period of time in which usually only a handful of people died, 10,000 died. That's in the United States. That's a real figure. The Centers for Disease Control quietly admitted this over the last couple of years, and a lot of people lost their babies, lost teenagers, lost mothers. If 10,000 people had died from a terrorist attack, we'd still be reeling from it. And that was very effectively withheld from public consciousness. Not so from KBOO. We reported it here, I'm proud to say, and I'm sorry that it happened. But we are not free from the possibility of an Ebola plague here in the U.S. And I say Ebola plague once again because, you know, that's maybe the 1 in 1,000 chance, but we get absolutely hysterical about the possibility of someone blowing up their shoe, even though that's only happened once. I would say that's a much lower chance. And yet, you know, you have to take your shoes off at the airport. We take these precautions. And we're all encouraged to believe in this war on terror hokum, and it is hokum. Well, just a few comparisons there. Number to call with your comments or questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Engineering a civil war is the best way to divide a country into several territories. It worked in the Balkans and is well documented that ethnic tensions were used and abused in order to destroy Yugoslavia and divide it into seven separate entities. Now think about this in terms of what's going on in Iraq. This is not a mistake. The U.S. didn't slip up. ISIS is there because it's supposed to be there. Note how quickly, and now I'm speaking for myself, note how quickly the Kurds snatched up Kirkuk. That's not a small town. That's not a little thing. That's Kurdistan. That's a payoff. And Iraq is being divided into sections because, and this is my more or less confident statement. Iraq is intentionally being carved up into sections, just as was threatened years ago in U.S. think tanks. And Micah is on the air. Number to call, 503-231-8187. Hello, Micah.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing well.
I've been thinking about all this for a long time, and I think a lot of people would agree that a lot of our problems in this country and foreign are based and rooted in corporate rule, corporate influence, and we need to eliminate that from our government completely. And people going along with trying to vote for the best Democrat or the whatever, we have to eliminate the whole mindset of this two-party system. And more, the time is ripe now, more than ever. There's only a 34% favorable rating of Republicans. On average, it's all Americans. There's only a 40% approval rating, a favorable rating feeling of Democrats amongst all Americans. So
yeah, and the approvals of Congress are somewhere below that of gonorrhea.
Yeah, yeah. So there's 60% plus Americans want something different. So the time is ripe for a third party. And it's not some far-flung thing. You have to make allies with people that you think you might not agree with. There's people on the right, there's people in the Tea Party, there's people independents and the left that are sick and tired of this corporate rule and corporate influence. They're sick. They know Wall Street's game and everything. They know the oil companies are controlling just about everything. They know the military-industrial complex is out of control on all sides, pretty much all Americans. And I've started a new party, the Revolutionary Party. It's all about eliminating corporate rule and eliminating corporate influence.
Starting a new party. Yeah. Wow, how about that? So how are you going about that?
From the ground up, telling my friends, telling everybody, wherever I can, Revolutionary Party, Revolutionary Party.
Are you going to run a local candidate?
We're going to run candidates for every office we can. We're going to run a candidate for president, everything.
Okay, well, I hope you'll keep us informed about that.
Eliminating corporate influence and eliminating the spying. Reigning in the NSA, none of this violated, blatant violations of the Constitution. You keep it to those two basic tenets of eliminating those two basic things, the spying, violation of the Constitution, and then corporate influence, and you'll get the masses behind it. And then after that, you let the chips fall for democracy. Let democracy play out and all the other little side social issues.
All right. Have you done the paperwork for your new party yet?
I need to officially. I've claimed it on my voter registration card. I talk about it all the time, but I'm not really interested in going along with the system and their usual riffraff.
Okay, so you want a shadow election sort of thing, or do you want to run candidates in an election?
Well, eventually when we build up steam and get enough people behind it, sure.
You have a website?
I'm not interested in playing by their rules. This is our country. We were going to take the power back, and we're going to do it our way.
Right on. Do you have a website?
I don't have a website yet.
Okay, well, sounds like you're just getting started there, and more power to you, and keep us informed here at KBOO. Thanks very much for your call.
You know, you'll get that
it's 9:37. Right? You're listening to KBOO Portland, and I've been talking about imperialism. I've been talking about intersectionality. And if you have something to say about that or about the Ebola situation, about the situation, the propaganda situation in the U.S., then give us a call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187, and Jimmy is on the air.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
I just wanted to comment on a couple things you've been talking about this morning. One, I think it's important that we consider the vectors for Ebola, and, there's a lot of cultural practices that occur in West Africa that we don't engage in here, specifically around dead bodies when they're being prepared for funeral and when they're during the funeral and the wake and that type of thing, that are important for people to understand as far as how that virus is transmitted, because it's not an aerosol transmission, it's a direct contact transmission. It is very contagious, and it does have an up to 90% fatality rate, but it is actually, we can't cure it, but what we can do is we can support people in order so that their own body can deal with the Ebola virus.
Which lowers the death rate to 50%, which is still absolutely staggering.
Right, but we need to remember about when we're talking about, I'm not talking about West Africa and the situation there. I'm talking about the virus coming here and vectors. Vectors are very important for people to understand about virus transmission and how that plays into.
It really is important, and that's one of the reasons I'm bringing it up is because the vectors are described as you say, and from the circumstances, and from the as I was saying, from the way it has spread, I'm not convinced that all the vectors are actually known. Also, I think that it's a little bit, it's a bit more contagious than described. For example, if you can imagine someone or maybe a couple of people who are very close to you, just think of whoever's really, really close to you. Imagine they had that and their skin started showing some blood. Can you guarantee that in the process of getting them into isolation, into quarantine, between your realization that it was going on and getting them into quarantine, can you guarantee that you would not touch them at any time? I think, you know, a hemorrhagic disease like that, I mean, one sneeze would be, if you were close enough, would be devastating.
I think the hemorrhagic stage is very late in the disease. That's one of the last symptoms that people have.
Well, sure, but it's a 21-day incubation period. The last part shows up pretty quickly, and then it's too late for no quarantine.
It's important that people understand vectors in a scientific sense and that there may be a 21-day incubation stage, but that doesn't necessarily mean that as of that entire 21 days that that person is also contagious. It's not the way things work. Different diseases have different stages for when they're contagious. And so I'm just trying to say simply that, you know, this is one of the things that people could educate themselves about. And then in that process, when they understand the principles at play here, they'll also better understand things like SARS and bird flu and this type of thing, because all of those same factors, you notice that bird flu and SARS were big issues in other parts of the world, and very, very little, if any, have those diseases come to this country, and those are because of how cultural practices play into the vectors that we're talking about. So that's,
well, sure, we're not taking care of birds, and yet the swine flu killed 10,000 of us.
ISIS and what's going on in Iraq and that type of thing. You know, I think another part of the narrative that's worth considering is the fact that so right now it appears that Iraq may be dividing up into, you know, I think the term is balkanization, where countries are sort of carved up and that type of thing. Well, I think it's important that people also keep in mind when we're talking about that, that those borders of Iraq were arbitrarily drawn by imperial powers once upon a time long ago.
And now imperial powers are redrawing them again.
Well, the imperial powers aren't necessarily redrawing them. The people that live in Iraq could be redrawing those borders by themselves.
Oh, yeah, right.
We're somehow involved.
On what bizarro planet? I can't buy that. I mean, they are getting arms from the Saudis. They're getting airstrikes from the Americans. Iraq is not a country where people get to decide things just by themselves. Iraq is a country where the imperial knife has been out, and the imperial knife is carving it up in a different way right now. And to say otherwise is simply to ignore history and to ignore human social relations.
That was why my statement earlier that, of course, the geopolitical scene and my caveat that, of course, we're involved, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, the larger arc of this may be that the borders are redrawing themselves. And, of course, we're involved because there's oil there. I mean, that's all part of it. But I'm just adding it into the narrative that those borders are not somehow set in stone just because Britain and the United States decided a long time ago and France decided a long time ago that this is where the line should be. You know, maybe it's actually a good thing that those borders are being withdrawn or redrawn. But maybe the question is, specifically, like you're saying, what is our role in those borders being withdrawn? So I just wanted to make those comments. And you know, congratulations on the extended show today, and keep it up.
Okay, thanks for your comments. Yeah, I suppose in the long term, it could be that there are better borders being drawn. But that's as may be, and right now that doesn't mean anything to someone who's been displaced by the fighting. And point I want to make is that we have blood on our hands. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. 8187, and Christina's on the air.
Hi, Teresa.
Hi.
Thanks for your show, as always. I just wanted to say a couple of things. One is I want to say the senator from Minnesota is Al Franken. The senator from Wisconsin is Tammy Baldwin. And anyways, so I just wanted to make that correction because earlier somebody said that Al Franken was the senator from Wisconsin.
Ah, okay.
And the other thing was I just wanted to remind people that, you know, we do have really great third parties here in Oregon and nationally that people can look at as alternatives to the two-party system. We have the Democrat, we have the Green Party, we have the Progressive Party, we have the Working Families Party. So we have a lot of alternatives here, and, you know, we have some really strong national third parties, too, especially the Green Party, that people can look to if they're looking for a party that really matches their values.
We also have a situation in which, we also have a situation in which these third parties must compete for corporate dollars or simply be marginalized. They can't buy the advertising time to even be heard. Not only can they not participate well in the debate, they can't, their side of the debate cannot even be represented without the millions and billions of dollars that it takes to get on the television, to get on the radio, to get on the media, and compete with these deep pockets. And so we remain under the hegemony of these of corporate control and corporate media.
It's always been the little people against the big 1%, and this is just another kind of manifestation of that. But when the people get united, they can overcome those barriers.
That's very true. I mean,
if you look at the arc of history, all of the progress that we have, even the few things that we do have, the few rights that we have now, they were won through the labor movement. They were won through people organizing, people struggling to make small incremental steps toward justice and human dignity for everyone.
Right on. I think the phrase is, let a thousand flowers bloom. Thanks. Thank you very much for your call. Number to call, 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. Been trying to talk about the strategy of tension in Iraq, and also have been talking about the habits of the corporate-owned news media and the ways in which they help rule us. And Mike is on the air.
Yes, Teresa. I've been jumping in and out of the conversation as I'm working, but on Iraq, who knows what's going on? No one has the answer. But one way I'm looking at it is as a major defeat for the United States imperialist force, and that's one way we should possibly think about this, because if we're talking about revolution, those things come on the heels of major defeats. And there's no way I can do the political calculus of what's changing there to see the United States coming out with this without... this is a massive defeat, in my view. I mean, $4 trillion ultimately completely wasted, thousands of American lives, hundreds of thousands of Iraqis and regional people dead and wounded. And our access to what we thought we were going there, or not ours, but there, you know, the imperialist access to oil being threatened. I mean, we should think of this maybe the way what happened to the Russian Empire in 1905, you know.
Well, it's a terrible defeat for the American worker and the American soldier.
A defeat for the imperialists.
I don't know. I think that what we're seeing is actually imperialist machinations. I mean, follow me on this. Well, it's very handy for the imperial powers that Iraq ceased to be. I mean, despite the rhetoric, that Iraq simply ceased to be. And so now we've got Kurdistan. We've got what was Al-Anbar province is now in the hands of the U.S. manipulated. And, you know, these people aren't taking their orders from Washington directly, but certainly Washington has had its hand in what ISIS does. And, it's chopping up Iraq pretty neatly. That certainly, Iraq now can forget about regaining its status as a regional power.
For sure. But Saudi Arabia, I mean, I think there are new forces happening, and they're not friendly to the old...
Well, the Saudis are backing ISIS. This is something we don't talk about. The Saudis, the anti-democratic, the kings, the most disgusting society, and our allies are backing ISIS. So, and that's
right, but they may be moving out of being our allies, is what I'm saying. I mean, I think we can't overestimate the power of stupidity that the people who control this government in the United States wield. I mean, the Barbara Tuchman's March of Folly, really good book to read, and I'll let you go at that.
Okay, thank you very much. Yeah, that's a great book. I haven't read that one in a while. I like Tuchman's books. They're very interesting. Time is 9:50 Pacific time, and you're listening to KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. This is Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know. I've got an extended edition today, and have been enjoying having a little back and forth with your calls. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187, and David's on the air.
Hey, howdy, Teresa. Yeah, I'm glad you used that phrase, strategy of tension. I hadn't heard that in a while, and it might be a good show in itself just to discuss what that really means. But I was going to remind people, I'm in my 50s, so I've got enough memory of early NASA. And, you know, the original launching of rockets into outer space, there was a lot of United Nations concern about whether or not space was going to be turned into a war field, you know, a war ground.
Well, and now we know that there were initial efforts, even in the 60s, by both the Soviets and the U.S. to weaponize space
absolutely.
Platforms. And there were astronauts that we never knew the names of, and I certainly don't have memorized, who were launched in rockets for the Pentagon.
Well, and that's the whole point, that if we were to allow immaturity into outer space, you could have an infinite immature budget. And imagine, as a taxpayer, what it would be like to pay for an infinite budget that was top secret.
We don't have to imagine it. We're doing it today. I mean.
Oh, I know. Yeah, absolutely. And that whole point, and that's so, you know, in the 60s, in the 70s, there was this was a big concern. And so there eventually got to be a law of outer space. And when the Soviet Union fell apart, the law of the of outer space was developed that would guarantee that there would be no war, development of a militarization of outer space. And that whole idea that Reagan came up with Star Wars was, you know, so preposterous. It was bad science plus top secrecy plus immaturity into outer space. So where I was going to go with this and where it comes to today is Landsat was an original series of satellite photographs that showed minerals and showed, the terrain of the Earth. And so when you changed the photographic filters of the Landsat cameras, you could all of a sudden discover if there was a vein of copper that was running underneath downtown Des Moines, Iowa, or if there was a vein of silver that was running through Darfur.
That's true. I remember there was the Space Lab made, we may be talking about the same thing, made quite a few multi-spectrum photographs. I say quite a few. I mean, it literally mapped the Earth with multi-spectrum photographs for that very reason.
Right, yeah. And so then, all of a sudden, after 9/11, all of that was made top secret. So now imagine if you're the Koch brothers, and you've got that information, and you realize that, you know, the Koch brothers are big on mining. And, if you were the Koch brothers or their competitors, and you knew where all of these veins were, politically, you don't want to tell your prospective, you've got to go out there and buy the mineral rights, right?
Yeah, you don't want to say why you want Ukraine. You just want to grab it, and then you can...
Exactly. And so whether or not these wars are really about the minerals. And so, for example, a lot of this data was known during when Clinton was in and we were invading Yugoslavia. Yugoslavia was mineral rich. And it was one of the things about Ceausescu was he was not he was kind of waiting for his price for minerals, and he was not allowing that much mining in Yugoslavia. And so when the after the Soviet Union fell, Yugoslavia as a mineral rich area became very wide open, and Clinton's invasion also exposed it. So that was part of the reason why after 9/11, all this data became top secret. And so we the people don't know why these wars are cropping up. But when you start going for, you know, just as a silly analogy, you take that old movie Blazing Saddles, Mel Brooks' Blazing Saddles. This town is sitting in a target-rich area, and Hedley Lamarr wants to invade. And so he goes and he hires all of these thugs and creeps and you know, he's got Klansmen and he's got bikers and he's got, you know, it's a comedy movie. But that's really what this ISIS is. ISIS is nothing more than a gang of thugs that are hired to serve the mining interests or the natural gas interests or the...
Oh, yeah, oil. I really think that you have your finger on the pulse there. I think that's what it's about. I mean, in these little states, as we see with Yugoslavia, as we see, for example, of the strategies that have been used in South America and Central America, when you have these little new weak states, well, it's much easier for the U.S. corporate jackals to go in and say, this is what the deal is going to be, you know, and this is how little we're going to pay you. You know, this is, yep. I don't know where to start. There are so many examples of this. Open Veins of Latin America is a good place to start by Eduardo Galeano, the great writer. Hey, thanks very much for your call. I think I have time for one more call. And I'll go with that. And let's see who's on the air next. That would be Garrett on the air next.
Hi. With that bit about them possibly being mercenaries for the mineral rights, that kind of blew away my little curiosity. I don't know much about history, but I know that a lot of that land used to be the Ottoman Empire. And when it got carved up, it just... the European nations just kind of parceled it out, like, you get this part, I get that part.
Yeah, that was done 100 years ago.
I'm kind of wondering if maybe that something like the Ottoman Empire might return to that area.
Well, the Ottoman Empire was a caliphate, and that's the way the ISIS leaders like to style themselves, so there's that analogy already. But I think what's being done is many states are being created at war with each other, and that's very convenient for Israel and the U.S. and for the corporations that run them.
Okay. I wish I knew more about this. Well, thank you.
Thank you for your call. Number to call, 503-231-8187. I think I will take one more call, and that is with Kevin. Hi, Kevin.
Hello.
Hi, what's up?
Hey, so what do you think about third-party chances of surviving in this country?
Well, I don't have a lot of hope as long as we have the Citizens United decision and the absolutely unlimited use of big money in the elections. Since the Supreme Court has decided ridiculously that money is free speech, the hegemons, the billionaires, can get things their way. And so if there is a third party, then it's likely to be something like the Tea Party, which is simply funded by people like the Koch brothers and kept. And that's their own strategy of tension. They are getting what they want out of the Republican Party at this point. So a real third party to, I mean, right now with the elections controlled as they are by huge money, I mean, how are you going to get on the air? You can't just go to a radio or a television station and say, well, I'd like you on principle to turn away the $1 million for the next commercial slot and just run mine for free.
Yeah, right. I agree. So why wouldn't people that are really concerned about this country and want to start a third party, why don't they just work with the Democratic Party and start something like Tea Party did within Democratic Party? Wouldn't that be easier?
It's worth a try. And once again, I say, you know, and I'm quoting Mao too much, but just this one thing, let a thousand flowers bloom, because we don't know what strategies will work. And we do know that we have to undertake many, many efforts to overthrow a system that has so much power over us. And yet, we are the 99%. Well, that music tells me that I'm running out of time. Thank you very much for your call. You've been listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. Stay tuned for more of the Incomparable Radio Zine. And remember, you can pick us up at 90.7 other frequencies elsewhere on the World Wide Web, around the world, and to all the ships at sea.
And good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland. 1 minute now before 10 o'clock. Coming up on your Thursday morning in about an hour, actually in about 15 minutes, join us for Flashpoints, a report today from Beirut, Lebanon on this week's suicide bombing. Also, the attorney for the family of Andy Lopez is appointed to the U.S. Justice Department's Civil Rights Commission for Northern California. At 11 o'clock, join us for Between the Covers. Today, host David Naiman interviews Jo Walton about her novel, My Real Children, the story of an old woman who remembers two lives, two worlds, and two different versions of modern history. And at 11:30, the film show celebrates archivists with a return visit from Mississippi Records co-founder Eric Isaacson. We also hear archivist Rick Prelinger talk about his new interactive film project, No More Road Trips. That is all coming up, but stick around. Up next, it's Chris Andre hosting Air Cascadia. Headlines, interviews, and commentary. Thanks, KBOO members, for supporting KBOO, your community radio station. Not a member? You can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today.
Where is your radio dial on Thursday afternoons from noon until 2? 90.7 FM is the place to be. Twice a month, DJ Charlie presents the Worldbeat Connection with the hottest Afro-Caribbean sounds in Portland radio land. Reggae, salsa, soca, New Orleans Afro-funk, Haitian compa and rara, and Antillean zouk share the airwaves with African highlife, Afrobeat, Congolese soukous, Malian blues, juju, and South African kwaito, among the other great styles. Traditional and modern expressions are all included. On alternate weeks, check out Top Rankin Reggae and Dancehall with Shocks of Sheba show, hosted by Teresa and Michelle. Any week, Thursdays at noon is sure to move ya.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from stateconstitutions.us, committed to empowering people of every state by providing the complete text and audio of their state constitutions. Those seeking to hold state governments accountable can learn more at stateconstitutions.us.